Seven of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 213. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the ever-lovely Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning. It's nice and sunny outside.
The strong and handsome Graham Thickens.
Oh, why, thank you.
Oh, here it comes.
And the incredibly intelligent Phil Wilson.
Oh, that wasn't bad.
I thought I'd be nice.
He surprised you there, Phil.
I thought maybe you would say, like, you know, pimply and pussy or something like that.
or really cute in a dress. Oh,
morning.
Man. Well, listen, I think we should just give up because Minnesotans are lagging and new business starts.
Yeah, isn't that something that costs?
Well, if
study?
we could ever get rid of winter, it might help.
Oh God.
Yeah, I wonder if that. Well, actually, it was a 2012 full calendar year study
analysis. Yeah, yeah.
But you know, there's a lot of problems with that. I think. I mean, Kaufman, you know, if it's got significant resources and could be doing some research to get at why. Of course, they don't particularly care about the state of Minnesota. They're covering the whole country. But one my take on it is that, you know, trying to explain it by saying the economy's come back so strong that people don't care to start their businesses anymore. They're just going to go take a job. I don't think that really explains it. But you know, I think it would be interesting for somebody to do a study of those who are contemplating starting a business and find out why they chose not to.
Could be useful.
So I got a question for you. Now, I'm not a native Minnesotan. So, I've always loved Minnesota. I've always just lived south of Minnesota. It's a troubling trend for a state with an economy built on homegrown business. Is our economy built on homegrown business?
Well, you know, they're probably harking back to Medtronic starting in a garage, you know, and 3M starting, up in Duluth making sandpaper, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. Okay. But you know, that's the mentality here. This state has a way higher proportion per capita of Fortune 500s. Depending on the latest revenue counts, we either have 20 or 21 Fortune 500s. We also have two of the largest private employers in the freaking world, really.
Cargill
and Mayo Clinic, right. Which, you know, and Mayo is not a business per se, but you know, I think this state is much more about what our friend Don Ball might label corporate drones. You know, people want jobs in big companies. You know, we're not as entrepreneurial as a lot of other states. We just aren't.
We like our security. We like knowing where the check's coming from.
Well, maybe, you know, but there was also a very good explanation in one of the comments on the Twin Cities business story, which broke this news first. Twin Cities Business Magazine. And one guy commented that, you know, that their methodology is, you've got to look at the methodology of the Kaufman study. It's highly based on construction-oriented businesses. Well, the businesses in the South are doing a lot more building, and weather relates to that. And, you know, there's just a lot more construction going on in other states than there is here yet, anyway. I mean, that would pick up summertime.
Well, I like what Dan Carr, though, said, too, in this article, which was that, the business climate in the Twin Cities seems better than the Kaufman Index indicates, that we enjoy the eighth highest level of employment backed by venture capital.
Yes.
And yeah, that's a lot of that's med tech, but.
Yeah, that's a stat that he tracks pretty nicely, which is a very interesting stat. But yeah, you're right. That's all the hundreds of millions that have poured into medical devices startups primarily over the last, 10, 20 years. But that slowed dramatically, which he talks about. So he kind of implies that there's a blame to be put on the lowered funding available to medtech startups. But that's just actually a small percentage of business startups. What does it cost to start a business? You go online and you set up an LLC for what, $100, $125 or something? You know, they're talking all businesses here. And, I just think it's questionable. And, you know, it's not to be taken all that seriously.
Yeah.
As much
yeah.
as I like Kaufman, you know, I'd like to see somebody do a study on, are people really leery about starting businesses now because of, you know, maybe more regulation, more cost, you know, the ever present whining about there's no funding, you know, I mean, you know, we constantly hear that, you know, and it's like, you can start businesses without funding. You can bootstrap them. People do, you know, yeah. And in the local tech economy, we see that time and time again, and many of them are doing just fine, thank you, without funding. So there's a host of issues surrounding that, but it sure made the news when we came in number 50 of the 50 states, you know. I mean, are you kidding me? That's bad, you know. So anyway.
Well, yeah, I just want you guys' take on this, because, you know, this Minnesota Twins adding tech at Target Field for the fans.
Or do they add a heating? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah. Well, they're talking about the MLB.com at the ballpark app. And one of the cool things is you can upload and share photos from every game. Well, isn't that what Marty Weatherall's app did?
Yeah.
Way
back in 2009.
Yeah.
Maybe 2008. Yeah.
And so it's cool that there's free Wi-Fi, even though it blows.
And does it really?
Having the app there that's kind of interesting and stuff.
So have you used the Wi-Fi at the ballpark, Steve?
Only once.
Okay.
And it's interesting.
This MLB app is actually a good idea. The app, the ballpark one.
Yeah.
And they sell things like seat upgrades and other things. I think you can order, you know, your hot dog and beer too.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
That's just a brilliant idea to make the experience better for fans.
Well, it's a two screen experience.
Well, I would rather yell at the concession guy.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You're a traditionalist.
I am a traditionalist. When it comes to the ballpark.
It's baseball's back, and you know,
the Twins
are trying to keep up with technology.
What Phil wants is he wants to be able to yell to the peanut guy and then hold his hand right by Lori's head so that the peanuts hit her. And then he could say, oh, I'm so sorry, honey. I should have had my hand over here.
That damn peanut guy.
Now, why would I do that? I love my wife. Now, if you were sitting next to me, on the other hand.
Yeah, there we go.
I'd like a bag of anvils, please.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'd like one bowling ball.
Oh, sorry, Steve.
The bigger question is, when are the Twins going to be able to play some ball here? I mean, the damn weather. How many rainouts or snowouts have they had this year already?
Incredible.
They've had more than all last season.
And it's not just here, of course. It's in Chicago and I think Kansas City. It's crazy. There's going to be so many doubleheaders come August. It's crazy,
yep.
You know, to make up those games.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, we didn't put this in the show notes, but it's something that I was reading about this morning. Really, and sort of an in-depth article about all the technology that came to the fore and the crowdsourcing of photos and so forth in the Boston Marathon bombings. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because the conversation around it sort of shifted pretty quickly to the ubiquity of cameras and the fact that cameras are getting more high res, the ones that are attached to buildings, you know, security cameras and so on. And will this spark a resurgence of desire on the part of companies and law enforcement to have more and more cameras? Because, you know, in London, for example, you literally can't go anywhere because every square inch of that city is covered with a camera.
Yep.
Just out of curiosity, Phil, do you think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
What, as far as having more cameras?
Yeah, just to have ubiquitous cameras.
And, you know, it's always difficult to say, but I think it's just sort of a fact that you get used to it. I mean, we all carry around a camera now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that whether you have it in your pocket or you have it on the side of a building, I think it's just a fact of life now that you're always on. We're always being watched. in some right. way, shape, or form. I mean, I'm saying we're watched when we're chosen to be watched, because not everybody is staring into a monitor or watching live feeds. Everything's just sort of recorded these days. But
we all know the government has that secret system, you know, that it's in that TV show where the computers like pick out people that are about to be like hurt, and then this rogue military guy and this other weird dude, they like find the person to like save them.
Yeah, that's real.
It's a very popular TV show. I forgot what it's called, but used to watch it.
It's so popular, I don't remember the name.
Person of interest. That's what it is.
Person of interest. Okay.
Yeah, I used to watch that, but it's got very repetitive.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
It's sort of like that show Revolution that was, you know, highly touted and had an interesting concept, and that also got repetitive and kind of boring. So.
Well, and part of this article, and I'll try to find it and put it in the show notes. But part of this article was about the malware that's PC based, but the malware that would turn on your webcam, both the audio and video.
Isn't that malware
in your house? Okay, malware. Sure, thanks, Phil.
Jeez. Mall of America ware.
Yeah, there we go. And so people think, well, geez, I can hide in my house, but maybe not.
Yeah, I think they had something similar on the Mac too.
Okay. So, well, I just think it was cool that there was the crowdsourced, you know, photos and all this stuff came in and people were doing identification. Now, granted, there was a lot of wrong information propagated by both the news media and people on Reddit and Tumblr and so on. But
I find it very eerie to see the pictures of these at the time suspected bombers, you know, inconspicuously walking along, you know, with their backpack right. full of explosives. It was very eerie to see that.
Yes, it was. Yep. I saw one this morning that one of the runners captured just after the bomb went off. He was running and he turned around and shot automatically, like people do, like almost breathing now, just shoot a picture. And the guy with the white hat, suspect number two, was walking away from the bombing without his backpack.
Right.
And that was a significant capture that was just spur of the moment by one of the runners.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
but then there was also another photo of that 8-year-old boy and the backpack, is right there. And the guy in the white hat's right behind him. A couple people back.
Wow.
I don't know.
How did you guys follow the news? I found myself spending less time watching any kind of television or coverage and spending a lot more time on online, whether it was, following the Twitter feed or that sort of a thing. I thought the folks in Boston, the authorities in Boston used Twitter very effectively in this particular instance.
Well, they did. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, the one thing I just didn't have a lot of time during the day. I was watching the live feed on the CNN app on my iPad, but there's a app that I have for my iPhone, and I ended up going and listening to about 10-15 minutes of real-time audio feed from Boston Police.
Oh, scanner traffic?
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that was and apparently that was, some people were just glued to it all day long because they were stuck at home in Boston. And so they're listening to the police. And I just think, as much as I love having that stuff public, so the bad guys can listen to it as well.
Sure.
And,
Yeah. Well, watching TV yesterday wasn't very productive because nothing was happening, you know, and it was like the same old, talking heads all right. day long.
Oh, right. I would be willing to bet you could turn it on right now and it would be the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were kind of joking about it last night. It's like, it's that whole, whole bit of, he's still in custody.
Yeah.
this just in, he's still in custody. Going and going and going and going.
Well, oh Julio gosh. Wrote an article in the paper, shifting gears here a little bit.
He did? When did he start doing that?
He did.
Paper.
Well, actually, it was on his blog.
It was the online TwinCities.com, but it was what Webbyopolis, so Colin McVoy, the ad agency, who's up for two 2013 Webby Awards.
I thought it was Colin McVoy.
It's well,
Cole McVoy is how
is it Cole McVoy?
I thought Colin McVoy.
Colin McVoy. It's Cole McVoy.
All right. Well, we'll have somebody comment, I'm sure.
You're right.
But anyway, so the Webbies are, as Julio says, kind of sort of the Oscars of the internet.
Kind of sort
And it's actually, it's kind of a cool site.
It is a very
nice site. a lot of Target work that's been nominated here.
Yeah. Well, they're really pushing the envelope, I think, which is interesting because it hasn't been, you know, e-commerce is still failing dramatically. I mean, it was interesting to have my wife go on BestBuy.com and then end up talking to somebody calling in because she was trying to redeem, I don't know, Best Buy reward points or something. And the guy finally said, well, what browser are you using? And she says, Chrome. And she told him what version. And he said, well, we don't work very well in Chrome. Can you open up Firefox or Safari?
Oh man.
Yeah, or Internet Explorer.
Oh my God.
They work great in IE6.
So
it really looks good in Netscape.
So yeah. So here's my wife who says to the guy, this is just so funny because she never does this. She says to the guy, do you think you guys could get into the 21st century? And I looked at her and I went, whoa, you kind of bitch slapped the guy there a little bit, you know?
but much deserved, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, good Lord.
I thought that was great.
Well, you know, they're investing a lot of money, if you believe what you read, in rebuilding BestBuy.com. I mean, and I'm thinking, you know, they're starting over from scratch, maybe, you know, they should be. I mean, as far as a complete re-examination of the site.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And that's just not technology. That's a lot more than that, you know? So they've got a significant expenditure in front of them, which is what Mr. Jolie has said as part of their plan going forward with some urgency, so to speak, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this is the fact that, you know, when people talk about retail being an experience and having the bricks and mortar set up for, you know, the customer experience and attracting people into the store and trying things out and so on. When I go to Amazon, one of the pieces that's experiential for me is reading the reviews and really going into the reviews, and people really spend a lot of time. Some of them are really funny too, but when I go to BestBuy.com, it's all about the transaction. So yeah. Here's the thing. Do you want to buy it? Click. That's right. It.
Yeah.
And
it's
so.
It's what Randy Guise, who was, you know, the original design director for BestBuy.com in 2000, said. It became all about product, you
right.
know.
Right.
And where's the experience, which is what we started with when I was there working with him. In 99, 2000 with, you know, a real brand behind, you know, a reason for coming to the site beyond just buying stuff, you know. But you're right. They turned it into a total transaction-oriented site.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yep, it's going to change. I'll guarantee you that. And I will virtually guarantee you they go back to the kind of vision that the original folks behind the site had. You know,
I sure hope so.
God, they've got to. They have no choice. I'll tell you, though, something interesting happened for me this week, and I won't tell you who the guy is, but a significant successful entrepreneur that I know, I finally met with, and has worked up a technology that will be amazing for e-commerce sites that blew me away, and I'm suddenly feeling a whole lot better for e-commerce after seeing what these guys have come up with, and you know, I don't know how soon
really?
a Best Buy might have it, but I can't wait to tell you about it. He just didn't authorize me. It's in alpha. It's in sort of launch mode here, but you're going to hear
Graham.
No,
we won't
no
tell
you're
going
to hear no public announcement. About it. I thought maybe, you know, maybe by July we'd, you know, he'd blow it open and tell the world about it. He said, no, they're laying low because, you know, they don't want anybody to start copycatting them. And
yeah.
And, but it's a significant startup funded by a very successful guy who you all know. And I hope to be able to talk about it soon. When we met, I said, now, can I pull out my iPhone and do a little interview here and do a blog post? No, not yet. You know, so I tried to get it on Minovate. I just want you guys to know, but not yet.
Thank you so much. Well, in the meantime, I guess we'll have to talk about Google Reader and Pinterest's love child.
Tim, have you guys tried this thing, Sana?
Have not tried it, no.
Well, I tried to get in, but they haven't let me in.
They haven't let you in yet?
Not yet, no.
Oh, okay.
Limited beta?
Well, maybe they will. Yeah, it took a few days.
I guess I haven't told enough people.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so anyway, it's a little buggy, but it does work. It's an RSS reader that sort of lays out the content in a Pinterest-like grid. It has a little preview thing, so you can click on an article and you can actually see the full text of the or most of the full text of the post right in Sana. And if you want, you can click, you know, the original source. You can share. Although I don't like the way that they're doing the sharing right now, because they create their own little page for it. So if you share it to, say, Twitter, people drop back into Sana to actually see the article, and then they have to click again to actually get to that article. So
yeah,
it's a two-step thing, which other people have tried to do too, and I just don't like it. So
that's the revenue model. They got to figure out a way to get somebody to expose their content. So it's,
I know. I'd rather have it go to the original source though. But you know, it's an interesting thing. I'm not sure how they do their the way that they aggregate the content, because it doesn't seem to come in reverse chronological order, at least when you first start up. So it's kind of crazy from that perspective. Then it starts to come in just like you would expect it, but there's no dates on anything. And I was noticing this morning when I fired it up that one of my dashboards, and that's the way you organize your feeds, is what they call dashboards, had content in it from a month ago. So I'm like, how do they, you know, why did they import all this? Maybe it was on the RSS feed. I'm not sure. But you can do interesting things, like you can subscribe to people's Twitter feeds and it brings those in, and, you know. So it's interesting to see, like, the people that I follow. I have a dashboard that's the Twitter links, and all it is links from people that I follow that have tweeted out. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at stuff.
It's a nice looking site. I just tweeted it out. It says designed for bloggers, but what I find most interesting about this is Curbly is behind it, a name I haven't heard in years. They were that was one of the first Web 2.0 launches.
Yep.
Back in about, and I'm trying to remember who the guys are. Is John Dahl involved? Was he involved in it originally, or
maybe
who's the developer? Oh, I'm blanking on his name. I haven't seen
Bruno
him in
Bornstein.
Years. Yes, Bruno.
Yeah.
When I clicked on the Curbly LLC link, though, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just, you know, spinning ball. But yeah, it's Bruno. I didn't even know that guy was still in town. I haven't seen him in ages. But
well, they have a bunch of sites, so. If you go to Curbly.com, I want to say, they're all listed there.
Yes.
Because they've got Curbly.com and .net.
Yeah, they probably have some businesses that are generating revenue, which is why we don't hear about them anymore, because they aren't out, you know, trying to raise money or something. But he had a partner, too. It was Bruno and somebody. It might have been John Dahl early on, but John's been out in San Francisco for a few years now.
If you go to Curbly.net, that shows all of their different properties. So
okay,
they've got a bunch of them.
.com is the home, what is it, home
for
design?
Curbly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's like a home design site or home remodeling. That's what it was in the beginning. I don't know what it is now. But, oh, yeah, okay, Curbly.net is the LLC company site.
And you can see all these different sites that they do.
Oh,
so they seem to do like these very focused communities of interest.
Right.
Yeah. They probably got a good thing going. It's interesting. Yeah. Curbly was founded in 2006 by Bruno Bornstein. He doesn't mention anybody else, but I'm almost certain there was another guy involved at one time. But anyway, good for him. It sounds like Sana, great name, Sana.io. Sounds like that could be a cool product.
Yeah, they needs to further development, but from, you know, from the early stages here, it looks pretty promising.
Well, and you know, the direction, when you look at what Flipboard has done, which is, you know, create your own magazine so that you can curate things of interest, that's directionally where curation is going. It's with tools that, you know, any of us can use for our own interests to be able to create, you know, curated basic content. And so it looks like that's really directionally where they're headed too. So you can embed this Pinterest like page in your blog, mm-hmm. And have, yeah, have content.
It looks good. And I see they've got a managing editor who's doing curation for them. A guy by the name of Chris Gardner. So yeah, it's a mix of technology and human curation.
Yep.
Same as Flipboard and Zeit and several others. Say, by the way, did you see there's a new update to Circa? That's worth looking at.
I haven't looked at it.
Version 1.3 adds some cool new tricks. So yeah, check that one out if you haven't updated it yet.
By the way, have you guys, you know, I was at Micro Center day before yesterday.
Steve packs a lunch and goes to Micro Center.
Well, they've totally.
Yeah, I see him there sometimes.
Yeah, and they've totally, re-merchandised and it's no longer.
Have?
Yeah, no longer looks like a neutron bomb went off in there.
Really?
Yeah.
They actually have
honest to God.
And, yeah, with big, great, big, tall shelves, and it's easier to find stuff. Anyway.
No kidding.
Yeah,
well, I got to get over there.
Yeah. So, at any rate, I was blown away by the number of tablets. And there was a little Asus for $149, a little 7-inch that I thought was pretty cool. And, but as I stood there, as I thought, I don't even know how to figure out which version the OS is at with any of these given tablets, because I don't use them, so I don't even know how to go look up the OS version.
Well, and there's a settings app, and you go in there,
I'm sure. Yeah.
About tablet, and it tells you.
Yeah. But I was blown away by the sheer volume of tablets.
Yeah, and most of them are running Android 4 or 4.1 or 4.2. So they're all running like the latest, greatest versions. So, yeah, it's, you know, there was a story that I saw on Gruber's site this week about the Nexus 7 and how poorly built it is. And, you know, early users are starting to see them wear out. And I'm not seeing that in my own personal experience, but I've only
what
had
wears
it for,
out.
The battery apparently goes bad pretty quick. People now a year out,
really?
10 months out, are starting to see battery problems. I have not seen that myself. Although I did put Facebook Home on my Nexus 7 last weekend, and that sucker runs battery like nobody's business.
So I
took it off again. And that's an interesting way of looking at your device. I have to say it's very well done. But one of the problems, I think, is that it runs too much battery.
Oh yeah. It's constantly checking. So it's,
yeah,
well,
it,
you find yourself, you know, it's like kind of Flipboard. You find yourself going through stuff quite a bit, more than you would normally, if you just, you know, dipped into the Facebook app itself. So I think that's what, you know, I was actually using the tablet more. And so that was actually what was running the battery. But yeah.
Huh. Use will do that.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure if I had that on my phone the whole time, I definitely could not get through the day.
You'd be too absorbed in your own life. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
No, it just would. It's, you know, it looks like it would, wouldn't work. So that's why I haven't put it. And, you know, I don't use Facebook that much anyway. So to me, it didn't really. I mean, it's an interesting idea. I'd rather have a Twitter Home or Flipboard Home. You know,
yeah,
that would
right.
to me that would be a better match.
Yeah, Facebook has become a bit of a challenge these days. It's very, you know, the wall is just covered with suggested pages and ads. I mean, I know it's a fact of life, but boy, I tell you, it's just, I get kind of tired of clicking report as spam, report as spam, report as spam.
Well,
which I don't know really goes nowhere, but
well, the only thing that keeps me there is the proverbial network effect. I mean, yeah. I've got cousins and, you know, close family and extended family and all that. And this is the only place that we connect, you know, in social media. And mm-hmm. so it's, that's kind of the push pull.
Yeah.
So too bad. Well, we'll see where it goes, but, let's talk for a little bit about Google Glass. Cause I, at first was really, I had big, big, big pushback on this and thought there's not a snowball's chance in Hades that I would, want to be walking around with
but now you're
Google
intrigued.
Glass. Now, but now I'm intrigued.
You're intrigued.
Slowly but surely.
And is anybody getting an Explorer pack by any chance or?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Explorer program? Are you?
No, of course not. It's $1,500.
Yeah.
Well, it's $1,500 and you have to go to what, New York, LA or Chicago to actually pick it. Not even Chicago.
Well, because they want to walk you through it.
New York, LA or San Francisco.
San Francisco. Yeah. So you can actually pick it up. So
that doubles the price.
Yeah, exactly.
Easily. If you're staying overnight, if you fly in the morning and fly back, maybe you can do it for $1,000 or something. But
thank God there's plenty of unboxing videos out there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So now I feel like I'm almost there.
Well, I still think it has applications. I mean, when you look at all the Go camera stuff, GoPro camera, you know, there's a lot of application for it. But you know, there's reticence by people who say, "Geez, I don't want to be talking to somebody and not know if I'm being filmed." You know, so there's things like that are.
They'll have to put a little red light or something on there so you could tell if the camera's on.
I don't know.
I don't think they'll do it.
No.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, I mean, they may have to simply because of legal issues. Maybe so. You know, because you're really not allowed to record people without them knowing it.
Yeah, that's why they
so
have
see the top of the, see the top of this podcast about that. Yeah, we're just talking about.
But think for a moment where this could go. So look at how powerful Google Maps Street View is. So when my daughter was down in Cuernavaca outside Mexico City, she gave me the address. She emailed me the address where she was staying, you know, because all the U of M students stay with families. And so I looked up the address, and there was actually a north address and a south address without N or S, you know, as part of it. But so it was a little challenging. But I found the street and was able to do Street View and look around. And I just thought, God, that is just unbelievably cool. And then when you look at Google Earth and you see the panoramic image service, and you can, if you look at the Eiffel Tower and you turn that on, there's, you know, thousands of pictures that you can click on and see the Eiffel Tower from a million different angles. But how cool would it be to be able to tap into Google Glass video taken of various tourist destinations, and you can kind of get a feel for a neighborhood or an area. I mean, think of what this would do for Airbnb if they could, you know, get people to say, you know, okay, so, you know, use the Google Glass and now walk around and take video of the surroundings of your property so people can get a sense of the neighborhood and what's happening and so forth. I just think that the potential for crowd sourcing of content is much higher with something like this.
Yeah. Location-based, you know, media will be, I think, the real killer app for this. But what's interesting is that Google is not allowing advertising, at least in the first rollout of the first apps. So that's sort of weird. Because you'd imagine that if you're walking down the street and there's some deal at, you know, a little restaurant, they would want to push that to you.
Yeah.
You know? Hey, we have a deal on cheeseburgers today, you know.
Only a matter of time. You got to be able to, you know, got to be able to get people in, you know, past the concept of wearing this thing. So I think that they want to pull down as many barriers as possible to get people to participate in the whole glass project. So
you could do some travel guides that would be crazy because, you know, you'd have historical footage you could have on there, you know, like you could be walking down the Champs-Élysées and you know, say, hey, want to see this in 1940 or whatever, and you'd see all the Nazis coming in to take over the city.
Oh, that'd be, yeah.
You know what I mean? From a historical standpoint, it'd be very interesting to have.
Yep.
Because you'd have the access to all this historical footage.
So here's what I would really love. Google Glass automatically turn off when you go in the bathroom. Because I got to tell you, I don't want you wearing Google Glass and looking down when you're in the bathroom.
And we'll know exactly where you're glancing when you're in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something tells me they're not going to have that built in.
No. Okay. So you'll have to be aware and make sure you turn it off.
I'll be looking forward to my clip-on Google Glass. So,
yeah.
since I wear glasses, I got to get the clip-on version.
Yeah. Or if you want to look cool, just get that 3D printed version and, you know, wear that and make people think you actually have real Google Glass.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, cameras, though, are becoming so ubiquitous, as we talked about before. But there's a spy site that I'll try to find the link for, put in the show notes. But they show, you know, common household items with built-in cameras, so you can buy them. So you can buy the clock. You can buy all kinds of different stuff. But they have stuff like framed prints, and the eye of the creature in the print is the camera, and it's black, and you can't tell. And so there's, you know, there's all that kind of stuff that's coming out, and so Google Glass may be, people won't even think twice about Google Glass, whether or not they should use it. So, okay.
Of course they have to be able to afford it too. And, you know, we'll see where the price might end up coming down or how it might end up coming down.
So who watched iSteve?
I got through about half of it.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is. I thought, oh, it's got to get better. It's got to get funnier. It didn't. And, you know, there's some actually good reviews out there. There's one in Macworld that you could construe as positive. And I thought this was the worst thing that I've seen done by people that, you know,
should know better.
Presumably want to work in Hollywood again. And it just it's just terrible. It's not funny. It's, in fact, I would, if I was the family of Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak himself, I would be this offended by it.
Mm. Wow.
And Bill Gates comes off as this goofy guy too. So it's like, yeah, the whole thing is just, it's not funny. It's super long and it's horrible.
Sounds like a bad Saturday Night Live bit.
Well, no, it's a bad Saturday Night Live bit. At least has some funny bits to it, or it's based on a funny idea. This is just, it's not even based on the life of Steve Jobs. It's just, it's a jumbled mess.
Oh, God.
Well, so the Wikipedia article about iSteve says that it was written in 3 days and shot in 5.
Yeah. No,
so that's probably your first clue that it probably wasn't going
to
be.
Well, it's supposed to be a parody, but it's just not funny.
Yeah.
I mean, at the beginning, there are some makings for some funny bits. Like he goes to India seeking enlightenment, and the guru there gives him 3 tabs of acid and says, when you want to see the future, just use these. And so apparently he uses them to invent the Apple One at the, you know, near the beginning. I did see that. And apparently he uses them further down to, you know, say invent the iPod and various other things. So that as an idea has some potential humor to it.
Yeah. There's nothing like drug humor.
Yeah. That he got all his best ideas on acid, but it's like, I don't know, even that gets old.
Yeah.
So this is a horrible mess. The only saving grace is it's free, but it takes up, you know, 70 minutes of your time that you're not going to get back.
Oh my God. Yeah. Couldn't they do it as a short? I mean, please.
Yeah. Jeez.
I mean, do something productive. Like last night I watched Lars von Trier's Melancholia on Netflix. And it's a very thought provoking 2-hour movie about the end of the world. And, you know, you could watch half of that in the time it takes to watch iSteve.
Wow.
Okay. Well, there you go. Things
so
to avoid.
It's over. It's over.
Yeah. No, I just stuck it in there because I thought that other people might see it and think, oh, this might be a fun thing to see. And it's just not. So
I believe
stay away.
Okay.
Yeah. I believe Matt Honan on Wired who says this movie sucks. Yep.
So, Tim, you need to give the Steve his little ramp up here. Go ahead, give him his little ramp up.
It looks like he's got something else in here.
Oh, he's
just added something, and I've added something because I just went out and bought 4 of them. Cree, CREE, who's one of the world's largest commercial and industrial lighting company, primarily focused on LED, came out and broke a price point for these new warm white. They also have, daylight type LEDs, but I went over and bought 40 and 60 watt versions of these LED bulbs. They're phenomenal.
Yeah, but and $13 a pop. Holy
but they,
crap.
But they drop. Yeah, but here's the thing, Phil.
But they last for 40 years.
Well, not no, it's whatever. Like 20. I think it's 25,000 hours. The thing is, though, is that they're so much better even than CFLs. They use less wattage than CFLs. The CFL 60 watters that I have burn 13 watts for a 60 watt equivalent, and these burn six or eight. Mm-hmm. Can't remember which, but
$13.
Yeah, but I bought them for 10. They were at Home Depot. The 40 watts anyway, but they're just phenomenal. And you need these because I'm going to buy the little sockets to control with my SmartThings controller.
Then I can dim
them and all that stuff. So that's why I'm starting to buy them.
What's Steve doing tonight? Oh, he's sitting around with his iPad, dimming his lights.
Yeah. I don't need my iPad to be dim.
Turning his TV on and off.
Oh my God. Hey,
you got to do something, Steve. Why not? Okay. Now, Tim, give him the ramp. Give him the thing. Give him the intro. Let's go.
It's time for
Steve's security tip of the week.
All right.
God, we really ought to produce something.
We should. All right. Well, so the security tip of the week is, and here's why this came to the fore, is that, this past week I was in half a dozen different locations, two of which had Wi-Fi that were WEP passwords, WEP, the wireless equivalent protocol. And anybody can hack that in about a minute. And so it's terribly insecure. And I looked around and here are all these people using just regular POP email. And I talked to a couple of different people. And so the point was that all their password usernames and passwords are going in the clear. And I thought, come on, really? And that's one of the reasons I love using Gmail, because it's HTTPS. And so it's a SSL, so it's encrypted. And so my past usernames and passwords are not going in the clear. Same with LastPass and other things that I use. But a VPN now is getting to be so easy to use and so cheap, and they're actually fairly fast, that why not encrypt all your traffic? And that's my security tip of the week.
So what app would you use to do that?
Well, if you wanted to build your own, I mean, that's the real difference is, do you want to be able to build your own, or do you want to buy a commercial service? And I'll put links in the show notes to which ones. But Hamachi, which got purchased by LogMeIn, is one great tool. So you can actually run it on your home machine and then log in remotely and use your home network or your office network if you want to do that. And everything encrypted from your computer to the computer at your home or office is encrypted. And then you're using that internet connection from your machine out. And so that's one way. But there are commercial services that you can use and just, pay them a monthly fee, and all your traffic is encrypted. And so I'll put links in the show notes. There's also OpenVPN, which is an interesting solution for PC, Mac, Android, iOS. And you can set up a private tunnel. And again, everything's encrypted, so you don't have to worry. I mean, even if you're banking and you're on an SSL, wouldn't it be great to be able to do that through another encrypted tunnel, just to be, on the extra safe side?
Yes,
okay. It would. I'm sorry. Was that a rhetorical question?
That was an actual. But I'll put some good links in the show notes.
Better to be extra safe than sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, I got to tell you that since I've been securing stuff and doing more and more with security, especially at the web server level, but also at our own local level, I think about my wife specifically, who I told you that she had somebody log in with her Gmail out in California while she was on a plane coming back from Germany. And of course, I immediately went in and set up LastPass for her and changed the password in her email and her Gmail, or it was her Google Apps account for her. And she's now using a VPN. So everything she does is encrypted. And it takes a big load off my mind, I'll tell you. Boy, this leg, this is a lead balloon.
God, you guys are downer this week. Yes, okay.
It's not a downer. It's not a downer. Gee, I remember the days when we used to leave our front door unlocked. You know,
back when I was a kid, I could leave my Schwinn outside the malt shop and nobody would steal it.
Oh man!
And we used to use pressure cookers to cook meat.
Yeah. Tim. Well, you know, in the old
too
days,
soon? What too soon?
Yeah, in the really old days, in medieval times, and when there were serfs, they would come and chop off your arms with a hatchet if you didn't do what they wanted, and so.
So upcoming events, got WordCamp coming up.
And I just saw that Lisa Sabin Wilson will be speaking at WordCamp. And for those that don't know, she's done all kinds of, you know, WordPress for Dummies books and all kinds of, she's got one of the best blogs on WordPress that's out there. Isn't she a contributor, Tim, do you know?
To
WordPress?
To WordPress in some way or to Automattic. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Okay.
But definitely, you know, very well known in the WordPress.
Very well known. Yep.
So, Steve, yeah. are you gonna make WordCamp this year?
I'm sure gonna try. Okay. Unfortunately, we're doing a ton of work to my dad's house because we want to get on the market in the next couple 3 weeks. Stuff's really starting to move, and there's big demand. So
the time is
that
right.
That is a big weekend for tech related events. Yeah, WordCamp. Twin Cities Code Camp is on the 27th. Midwest Mobile Summit, if you feel like a lovely drive to Fargo, that's the 28th and 29th. So,
and if you drive like Phil, you can get up there in 3.5 hours.
Is that true? I don't know. I've never been to Fargo. So I'm excited. It's a road trip with my son, meaning I get to stare at him while he listens to, you know, his iPod.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Like actual, a lot of thinking time.
Are you guys going up there?
Yeah, I'm going up.
I'm going up.
I think I've got a rider, Wade Beavers from Duet might ride along with me. So I'm going to head up Sunday morning about 8 a.m.
Let's say we caravan. What do you say?
Yeah, we could do that. Well, you know, there could be a blizzard, so we probably should hang together, you know.
Like a wagon train, yeah.
Did you hear the water might be rising, like, really bad up there? Like, they're saying now it could be a record potentially with this latest snow.
Well, it'll be interesting to see.
And it's going to come to a head maybe about the same time that the event is going on. I'm praying it doesn't come into downtown Fargo though. It better not.
We'll have to roll with it.
Or we just take our galoshes, right, Phil?
Sure. Let's
pack those galoshes.
That's exactly right. Spring conference for MHTA coming up on the 30th.
Yep.
Boy, that's a busy week.
Yeah, that would be Tuesday, right? Wow.
New on our list is the National Day of Civic Hacking.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting because it's a it's an event that's across the country in over 40 cities, and it's to bring together people to build and invent new technology solutions using publicly released data to solve challenges relevant to our neighborhoods, our cities, our states, and our country. So it's cool. It's high-minded hackathon. So, interesting idea.
Well,
so,
you know,
nobody's going to be building a fart app or anything at this thing.
No. This is all like, you know, doing stuff for the public good.
Do you guys remember the Chicago crime map mashup?
Yes.
And that's what they did. They were one of the first really highly visible civic hacking kinds of adventures where they got twisted the arm of the police department and finally got the data and were able to create the maps mashup, and you could see crime in your neighborhood. You know, it's not real time. I mean, but it would be, you know, every 24 hours they'd add new data. So there could be some interesting apps and approaches that would come out of this.
We also leave the June 5th through 8th date for the I.O. Festival for the Walker Arts Center. Even though it's sold out, we leave that on our calendar and talk about it in the hopes that Graham can get a free ticket.
Yeah,
there we go.
If, just in case that press pass request comes through, it's coming up on 3-4 months now. So if you're listening out there, you IO people, come on.
That's right.
We're Minovate here.
Hey, you could do worse than having Graham come to your place.
Well, it's Minovate. I'd be there for Minovate.
There you go.
That's true.
This is important stuff.
That's true.
We do.
Well, is there anything else other than the fact that here it is, Saturday the 20th, and the new Southdale Apple stores is debuting today?
Yeah.
It's, half an hour.
It's larger than the Mall of America store.
I have a feeling it's going to be predominantly white. With nice looking tables.
Some large tables.
You think they'll have one of them there, genius bars back there?
One of them
genius bars. Yeah. Is it a two? Is it a two level, Steve? I don't even know exactly where it is.
No, it's single level. No, I'm not sure either. I haven't been in there when they've been building it.
Yeah, I didn't notice it or hear about it the last time I was over there. No one ever said anything about it. But
you know, we came dangerously close to talking about everything but Apple today.
That's not why I did it. Please.
In fact, we could conceivably edit that right out.
Yeah. Well, you could have countered with, oh, by the way, their stock's under $400, Steve.
Yeah.
So, you know, I still $400. What was the all time low for Apple stock?
You know, all time.
Well, December of 08, I think it was at $84.
Yeah. Well, I was buying it between 15 and 20 back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
So I don't care. Did you see where even Henry Blodgett came out and said, oh God, I got to buy, you know, it's like, I don't buy individual stocks,
just
but
a cash position alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know,
yeah, it's crazy.
It is.
They're going to unloose something here soon though, you know, and a dividend increase. And I mean, it's, you know, we've had a real dearth of Apple news here.
There hasn't been much released.
Okay.
From the company.
Cheap iPhone is on its way. Yes, that's right. And an Apple Watch is on its way. And, you know, a new iPad 5SXY.
I'm betting we're going to hear a stock-related or dividend-related announcement before we hear a product announcement. But WWDC is only 7-8 weeks away if they hold it at the normal time. So we know we're going to hear something by then, product related.
Yeah. What can they really do though with the iPad? I mean, the mini, they can put a Retina screen on it, but that's about it. The other one, I mean, what can they do? I mean, put a faster processor, I guess.
Well,
it seems like that is a very mature product at this point.
Well, but they could add like NFC or something like that, or, you know, there's different things they could do. I don't know that they would, but.
I don't know. So I don't buy that they're going to do a whole lot before the end of the year. I think they will release some stuff at WWDC or at least talk about it. But I wouldn't hold my breath for any major stuff until the fall.
Well, the new iPhone.
Yeah, I think it'll come out in September.
You think it'll be that late?
Just remember.
And it'll be a 5S and they'll have this cheap one.
Just remember, if they don't holodeck, then no one will care.
So, Tim, now you think they're going to do a cheap one?
Yeah. No, I think they will. Maybe they'll do the cheap one at WWDC.
Foolish.
No, I think it's an interesting idea. And the reason is this, is that the rest of the world, you know, you buy your phone. You don't get it heavily subsidized like we have it here. But you pay far less for your contract. And T-Mobile's trying to bring that to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of masking it in ways to, you know, so you don't pay $600 for your iPhone. You pay for it over 2 years at $20 a month or whatever. So you end up paying like $100 down and then you pay $20 from there. If there was a way to get an iPhone, you know, a regular iPhone, a cheaper iPhone for, say, $400, I think a lot of people would be up for it, particularly if you're going to spend, you know, $40 a month for your service or whatever. It'd be, you know, you'd be able to buy service for a lot less money than what other people charge. So I think if we got into that, and they certainly need that sort of lower price for the rest of the world, like China, you know, I think it does make sense, and that it is an area of growth for their iPhone brand.
Yeah, okay. And India too. India is a huge market for them. Maybe even more promising than China right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
Well, we'll see what happens. But like I said, we almost got out without.
Almost.
It was close.
That is going to do it for us on
the Minovate Gang podcast.
See you. Oh. Enjoy the sunny weather.
Yeah. Go get your black HTC One, Phil.
Yeah, it won't be available for weeks. The coming weeks.
Yeah, buy an iPhone then.
Hey,
take care, guys.
iPhone. I'll buy the cheap one.